Good morning, KPCW listeners, and welcome to this week's Community Campfire. I'm John Burdick.
Hi, I'm Andrea Buchanan. Welcome, welcome. Hey, John, what's today? What's happening today? I saw a snowflake in the forecast.
I was just looking that up. We have a 90% chance of some showers and rain tonight, and apparently with the temperatures, we're going to float around that 32 degrees up in the higher elevations.
So exciting.
It's not going to accumulate, though. But okay. It'll at least be able to see some snow.
I think it's a cause for celebration.
Woo-hoo.
Absolutely. Woo-woo.
It's coming.
We have a great show for you today. Well, first, shout out to Bill Skinners. Skinny on Sports, he's out for the day, but he's going to be live tonight from, where is he going to be?
No, he's running the show here from the board. So you'll hear Bill chiming in with scores and updates as we broadcast live tonight.
But we look forward to welcoming him back to our show next week. We're getting stingy with Bill. Come back, Bill.
He'll be here, just not on our show today. But we do have a great show. What do we got?
Well, we've got Amber has a really cool story about an all-women enduro rally. It's an 8 days off-road navigation race. No GPS, no cell service, just paper maps and compasses. Remember those?
Yeah, you and I, what was that, the Thomas Guide? What was that?
Oh, yeah, Thomas Guide in L.A.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, yes. That, I have a funny story about that, but that's another day. Okay, and then I also had the pleasure of sitting down with the Meinholds, a local family whose middle son, Jones, was born with cystic fibrosis. They are an inspirational family, and they're doing 30 miles in a day hike to raise money and awareness around this, you know, genetic disease and find a cure. So that's a really inspirational story. I can't wait for you guys to hear it.
And this week's musical sesh, Mitch and I got to hang out with the Silver Kings Rocking Company, rocking out here in the studio. But first, let's keep it legal. Madeline, what do you have to say?
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Community Campfire are their own and do not reflect the views, opinions, or official policies of KPCW, its management, staff, or affiliated organizations. The content of this program is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement by KPCW of any opinions, products, or services discussed during the show.
Andrea here with Campfire Kids, Elodie and Griffin. They are brother and sister. And I had a great time with them learning about all the latest and greatest phrases that the kids are saying these days. And if you haven't heard this one, you literally must be under a rock. I'm just kidding. But seriously, it's everywhere.
Oh, God.
I'm going to start it.
Yeah.
6-7.
To boys in my class, too.
What is 6-7?
I think it's because, like, a basketball player, someone asked him about his height, and he's, like, 6'7". Then someone turned that into a song. You know, everyone is, like, 6'7".
And then it was in the school assembly where everyone was saying 6'7". Then a guy said, 6'7". Now, that guy is the 6'7 kid, and, yeah, that's how 6'7 started.
Were you the 6'7 kid?
I guess. I mean, it's if you've not heard 6'7, seriously, it's something else. And you have to do your hands like this, up and down. 6'7. Okay. I know. It's odd.
It's good. It's
the kids these days, they're crazy. So Amber's kicking it off with our first story. She's got some amazing tales from the road. Let's hear it, Amber.
Act 1. Shift Happens. That's the name Michelle Kirby gave her trailblazing off-road team. She may call Park City home, where world-class skiing meets perfectly bougie après-ski, but every fall she trades that cushy mountain lifestyle for something dustier, louder, and a whole lot more rebellious.
So there is a rally that happens every October. This is the 10th year, so it's a big anniversary year for them. It's called the Rebel, and it's R-E-B-E-L-L-E rally. It is the only navigational rally in the U.S., and it is the largest navigational rally in the U.S. It is also all women.
Picture this. 8 days, 1,600 miles, no GPS, just paper maps, a compass, a satellite phone for emergencies, and your sanity, well, while it lasts. Now add hundreds of women, from amateurs to seasoned professionals, competing in crossover or four-wheel drive classes, plotting points by latitude and longitude, and chasing their vehicles across the wildest corners of Nevada and California, from the high Sierras to the Imperial sand dunes near the Mexico border. Michelle is 59 years old. Her best finish was 7th place, and this year she hopes to reach the podium. It's not just about speed. It's about navigation, grit, and the ultimate test, making it out of the desert with your teammate still on speaking terms.
Imagine being around 250 women in a tent. It gets a little crazy, but it's super fantastic. It's empowering. It's been a huge growth for me to learn about the rally world. But this is navigation, so this is not Baja 1000. You can drive your vehicle in your garage in this rally without modifications, so they call that bone stock.
Michelle's neighbor first introduced her to the rally, and this fall marks her fourth year behind the wheel. Every day starts the same. Race organizers hand out maps at dawn. You plot your course and then drive straight into the middle of nowhere. You hit checkpoints, and by nightfall, you hope you found your way back to camp. Friends and family aren't allowed to follow along in person, but they can track racers online.
It's full 12 hours of just relentless terrain and numbers and crunching, and she sprinkles in little nuances that throws us off, and sometimes we'll pull up to a checkpoint and they'll take our nice, beautiful maps and give us maps that have nothing on them but just side coordinates, and we have to plot new points. And it is not a game of someone that can't adjust. You have to be flexible.
There are daily stage winners. There are also awards for Team Spirit, Rookie of the Year, Bone Stock, and even an International Cup, since women come from all over the world to compete. Michelle started her rally career in a Lexus GX 460 she nicknamed Betty White, but this year she's rolling in with sponsor Tony Warner and a Grenadier called Linda. Whatever she's driving, she says the adventure with her navigator is always the same, equal parts magic and misery.
My teammate is new this year. Her name is Sabrina, and she is actually a voiceover and an actress out of LA. She's a musician. She plays in a band, and she's just.
So how do you vet your navigator?
Yeah, we call it Rebel Tinder. It's pretty funny because you have to be careful because this is a relationship. I mean, you are in a car for literally probably some instances 14 days because you have the commute to get there. You have the commute to get home, you have the prologue, you have the gala, and then you have the 8 days of competition. You better be getting along.
Act two, and what we'll simply call day three. By now, the rally dust has settled into every crease and pocket, and the real tests begin. Michelle has watched plenty of teams come unglued in the dunes, where navigating the endless sand can break even seasoned drivers. She once spotted a competitor stranded on the bank of a water canal, clipboard in hand, while her teammate and the car had vanished like a desert oasis.
And they call it the day three, when things fall apart. And it is literally a day three, because you are sleeping in a tent, you have no phones, you have no communication with the outside world, which is absolutely the best part of the whole rally. You can't talk to anybody that is not part of the rally. If you do, you can get disqualified. So you don't even know what's happening in the world. And so your focus turns completely inward to yourself and your teammates' performance. And when things are going bad, they go really, really bad. When they go really well, it's fantastic.
And speaking of when things go really, really bad.
And even last year, during our event, we had part of our course was taken away from us the morning of. So talk about thinking on the fly. They said, yep, you don't have a permit today. We've had to pull it. You're not going to ride on this trail today. Some of it's in Death Valley. And a lot of these places get washed out, too, from horrible rains. And it ruins the course, you know, or changes the course. When they set the course to the day that we rally on October 8th, the course has changed because of flash floods. Or maybe there's a squatter. That's a story. We were told in the morning that we were not allowed to go through this one area because there was a gentleman who had made his compound there, and he was armed and dangerous and had set explosives around.
The rally tries to enforce leave no trace principles, and Michelle has learned all kinds of fascinating facts.
They talk a lot about the desert tortoise and preserving it. I was lucky last year, I actually got to see one. And you have to very carefully move them because if you make them, quote unquote, urinate, it kills them. They dehydrate. That's all the water that they have stored up. So the goal is to let them cross your path and then go on, which could take about an hour. Or you can quietly sneak up behind them and not let them see you and bend your knees and keep them as low to the ground and don't let them see you and gently carry them off so they don't ish. You know, you don't want them to ish because if they ish, they dehydrate and then they die. So there is all
they
of...
ish?
They ish. That's a Hawaiian thing. Yeah, the ishing. You just go to the bathroom.
Act 3, the home stretch. Michelle says one of her toughest days came on the final stretch last year. The endless rolling terrain left her feeling like she'd have been waterboarded for 9 straight hours.
You just want to see the finish line, cross the finish line, and I did. I did lose it. When I came through the finish line, I was in tears. I was so mentally exhausted after we started down in Mexico, and now we were all the way up by Joshua Tree. So you can imagine the distance that we had to travel off-road, and we were in a sandstorm, we were in a whiteout, we were in 70-mile-an-hour winds, we had to go through Joshua Tree at 25 miles an hour for 3 hours. It was painful. Then they put us in an OHV area that had whoops all day. And then you cross the finish line and your teammate looks at you, she goes, here, hold my beer, see you next year. And you're like, what?
So what is it that keeps Michelle coming back? It's not only what she's learned, but who she's become.
It just seemed way out of my wheelhouse. It just wasn't something, I'm not a competitor in automotive. I don't even know anything about automotive. And so to put a woman in what is considered a man's world, that's what it felt like, you know, and you don't want to make a fool of yourself because you don't understand how to change a tire. Boy, do I know how to change a tire, and I know how to plug a tire, and I know how to change my oil now, and I know how to look at all the different bolts and control arms. And so, I mean, I've learned so much. It has been really empowering as a woman to be able to, and young women too. I mean, we've had people as old as 78 years old out there competing with their daughters. It is definitely a game of chance, but it's also a game of success and learning more about yourself.
So what have you learned about yourself?
That I'm more resilient than I thought I was, that I can do hard things, that I can make new friends and friends from all walks of life. I mean, that you might not otherwise walk up to and sit at a table and have dinner with, and you will walk up to a table and you will sit down, you will have dinner with people that look different, sound different, have different perspectives, have different politics. You don't talk about politics though, but you know that you do, but you respect each other. And what's cool is on the 9th day, we've all connected under this one umbrella of what we just accomplished. The saddest day is on that 9th day when everybody pulls their phones out. Everybody turns away from each other and they're looking at their phones and nobody's talking. And you just realize how we have become such an empty society. And I'd be curious to see what we could do if we could take away phones for just, you know, 2 days a week and what the family unit would be like, what the friendships would be like, what the community would be like. Yeah, I think the thing I notice most is how I really love the disconnect. Just to not hear about politics, negativity, and just be in the moment.
In the Rebel Rally, Michelle finds more than sand and checkpoints. It's 8 days of disconnecting from phones, schedules, and the noise of the world, and seeing women in a raw, unfiltered setting, dirt-smeared, strong, and fiercely connected. The rally reminds her that as we push through our day threes together, we emerge stronger and unstoppable. This is Amber Johnson for KPCW's Community Campfire. Amber here. Welcome to the Picky Eaters Unit. I recently caught up with Campfire Kids Bo and Luke, two seasoned experts in the art of eating only what's perfectly handheld and mysteriously free of anything green. Their top pick? Chicken strips. But what exactly are they?
I love chicken strips.
Chicken strips are good, but just normal chicken.
It's just chicken strips are just chicken, but better.
No, like chicken strips, the outside, like the crust, is like, it's kind of like chicken bread, and it's like crusted.
What exactly is chicken but better? All right, next up, Andrea's story about one family's mission to hike 30 miles in one day to find a cure for cystic fibrosis.
Cystic fibrosis is a rare genetic disease that has no cure. And until recently, the life expectancy of a child born with CF in the United States was 40 years old. That has dramatically increased due to modern medical advances and new drug therapies. And while the specific life expectancy can vary based on factors like lung function and access to care, significant improvements in managing symptoms and treating complications allow children born with CF today to live much longer than previous generations. Two incredible Parkite parents, Mackenzie and Stephen Meinhold's son, Jones, who's age 4, has CF, and you have to listen to their story of how they are giving Jones the best chance at a long and beautiful life here in the mountains of Park City, and also trying to help others who may not be so fortunate. On October 11th, they are hiking 30 miles in one day. You heard me, 30 miles in one day on the Appalachian Trail to raise money, to find a cure, and to make sure every child with CF has access to the same medications and treatments that their son, Jones, does. Let's listen to their story of hope and love, and let's cheer them on. So tell me about what you're doing in order to bring awareness, and is it a fundraiser as well?
It is a fundraiser, yes.
Okay, wonderful.
Jones has cystic fibrosis, which is a very rare genetic disease. He was born with it. He will have it his entire life. There's currently no cure for cystic fibrosis. It's called CF for short. I mean, you know, we try to stay very positive about it, but it's a very terrible disease. It's has a lot of repercussions in the body. The science of it is that his cells cannot process salt the way that yours and mine can. There are gates within at the cellular level that are broken, so he can't move salt back and forth. And as a result of that, the body builds up really thick, sticky mucus, primarily in the lungs and digestive system, but it can also, CF can cause a number of complications. Because of this mucus, he's extra prone to lung infections, respiratory issues, decreased lung capacity. And then from the digestive perspective, he can't absorb nutrients the way, you know, a normal person could. So he's pancreatic insufficient, which means he has to take enzymes before every snack and meal. So he takes 14 pills a day just to digest his food right now.
Wow.
And he's on a high calorie, high fat diet to sort of counteract the inability to absorb nutrients. He goes to his cystic fibrosis clinic quarterly down in Salt Lake. He's at the outpatient clinic at Primary Children's, and they're amazing. We've been, you know, so blessed to have that in our backyard, basically.
Yeah, they're just like extended family to us at this point. They take amazing care. So his CF, it was on the newborn screening. You know, as soon as he was born, they do the prick for the blood. They do it on in the newborn screening card tests for some of these more advanced diseases that are really approachable. If you attack them at a young age, it just really helps out, but sometimes you might not pick up on them. So, but here it was like 2 weeks later, we were in, McKinsey was going in for a feeding lactation.
Yeah. Sort of standard, standard new baby visit to see the lactation consultant.
Uh-huh.
And they pulled his newborn screening results at that visit and were like, have you ever heard of cystic fibrosis? And I was like, ironically, I have, because we have friends in North Carolina that also have a daughter with CF, which is insane.
I was going to say, how rare is it?
It's really rare. There's only 40,000 people in the U.S. that have the disease.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Especially for both of us couples to not have any, be known as a carrier or any family history for it to pop up in.
It's crazy.
Wow. You were in this, you're going there for as a new mom.
Mm-hmm. So the pediatrician, you know, pulled up his, now it makes sense. You know, he wasn't gaining weight as a baby like he should have been. And, you know, I was like, oh, it's breastfeeding, you know, we'll figure it out. But the pediatrician happened to be in the room and she, you know, said, have you ever heard of cystic fibrosis? And it's not the newborn screen is just a screen. It's not a diagnosis. So I think it's through the liver actually that they flag one of the insufficiencies. And so his whatever number it is related to the liver came back super high. And they were like, it's not definitely this, but start wrapping your minds around that it could be this diagnosis. At the time, the life expectancy of someone with cystic fibrosis was in the 40s. So it's really hard news for new parents to get. But they had the blood work. They had our genetic mutations already figured out. So they knew Jones has one mutation from Steven, one mutation from me. They knew which ones those were. They knew, you know, they had already come up with a treatment plan for us. And, you know, they were like, of the mutations, these are the ones you want because we can start treating it really early.
Okay.
There's a drug that's more known called Trikafta, but a similar drug is called Kalydeco. And those are the ones that are kind of really game changers for cystic fibrosis. They address the salt transfer kind of at the cellular level. And so at the time, I believe a Kalydeco was approved down to 4 months. And this was like the youngest, you know, it could possibly be given. And so that's why they were so hopeful that they knew that he was the future of this disease, being able to start the meds that soon. And it's kind of like sheltered us from the reality of the disease. Like, because talking back, it makes me emotional to think about. Just like that it was, you know, a thing to begin with. And he's just thrived so well since. It's always a reality check to, like, talk about the disease because we live such a great life with him and he's doing so well on the meds. But
and you're saying if you hadn't had this particular mutation, the meds would have started later or not even
allowed? Or maybe not at all. Yeah, that's one of the really terrible parts of the disease is that there's over 2,000 different mutations that cause it. And so many of them are treatable with this, you know, sort of top tier of drugs, these certain drugs made by one manufacturer in the U.S. Jones's total care per year between clinic visits, he's on 5 or 6 different medications at this point, is around like $350,000 a year.
Wow.
And that's without any hospitalizations. Yeah, we've been super lucky that he hasn't been hospitalized yet.
That's just normal preventative maintenance.
Yeah, that's just...
Does insurance cover it?
It does.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, I mean, we are so lucky.
That's a personal question, but
no,
I just couldn't even...
It's a big it's a big piece of education with CF. It's a big point of contention is that there's one drug manufacturer making these drugs. Their profit margins are insane on these drugs. That one is it's like around $325,000 a year. So it's just that one drug.
The drug alone.
It's like $30,000 a month. And then
which
others
he takes
are
twice
like
a day.
$2,000 to $5,000 a month.
And it costs, I don't know, I forget what the exact number is, but it's like somewhere around $20,000 a year to manufacture.
It's a familiar story, right? But this is really
egregious. It's just crazy to hear the specifics of it in our first hand, to be like, yeah, this is just it.
What's the company?
It's called Vertex Pharmaceuticals. And at the same time, we are so thankful
of course
he is on this medication. You know, like, so thankful that they produce this drug because his life would be...
It's adding decades.
Yeah, it's adding decades.
That's why we're continuing to fundraise in the CF Foundation, and a lot of the groups contribute as much as they can to help keep moving it forward, because that's the caveat, is that there's such a large population that still needs these meds, and they're so helpful. And, like, literally life-changing, adds decades of years of life to people.
Yeah.
And there's a cure around the corner as well.
There is a cure around the corner. You say that with...
I mean, it's kind of like, that's the motto of the disease at this point.
How long has it been studied, do you know?
There was this initial group of moms, actually, that started the push for, you know, figuring out what cystic... It's been diagnosed for a long time. You know, has now manifested into the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, which is a national nonprofit. They have chapters across the country, including a chapter for Utah and Idaho. That's our region. They're based in Salt Lake. That's who we're fundraising for. Jones has an older brother who does not have CF, and he has a younger sister who does not have CF. We did IVF for our youngest to be able to do the genetic testing to make sure that, we wouldn't.
Is it once it happens once, is the likelihood it could happen again there?
Yeah, it's a recessive gene, so it's a 25% chance that any one of our children could have
every single time.
So what does Jones's average day look like? Can you tell by meeting him, or is it something
that's... I'd say no. He's a classic middle child that lives in Park City.
Yeah. Love it.
We've made a lot of choices to specifically kind of care to him, and one of them was just his child care. I ended up kind of leaving my work and committing to a stay-at-home parent, which is kind of a dream come true. And we eventually found Forest School for him, which he was at last year, and he's in this year again, which is just outside all day. He wakes up in the morning. He's an early riser, 5:30 to 6:30, closer to 6:30 nowadays.
No matter how late he goes to bed.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
We start out by doing what we call his exercises, which are his a vest treatment. So just imagine putting on a vest that kind of has air chambers that puff, 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 and vibrate your chest front and back. And before that, he'll take a medicine that helps open up his lungs, and then another medicine while he's doing the machine that helps break up and loosen the mucus so mm-hmm. that when he's older, he'll learn to cough it out. And that's 30 minutes twice a day. And then, like Mackenzie said, with each meal that he has and snacks, anytime he eats, he has to have enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
In pill form. He's learning to eat the pills, but we break them open and you pour them on like a little spoon with some applesauce.
He's done that his whole life,
like since a tiny baby. Looking back, you forget how involved it is. It's easy to kind of like accept it as a routine, but it's a good bit.
Yeah, now it's just what it is.
It's normalized, and they get to do iPad time, him and his brother. But he accepts it, and it's just part of his life. But now he runs. He's almost four.
He loves biking.
Learned to ski on his own last year.
Wow. Amazing.
So yeah.
What about airplanes? Can you go on airplanes with him?
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. During COVID, we were masking more so than the average people. You can't just be sheltered forever. You know, mm-hmm. they want them to have a normal childhood.
So tell me about this hike that you guys are doing. I went back and read the email. I'm like, did they say 30 miles in a day?
Yes. So the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation is a national nonprofit. They have chapters all over the country. So our chapter does a hike. They do a bike ride called Cycle for Life. One thing that's really increased in popularity across all of the chapters is what they call the extreme hike. Our chapter does it in Zion National Park, but because we have these friends in North Carolina, why don't we do the North Carolina hike, which is 30 miles in a day on the Appalachian Trail in Western North Carolina. And we have formed a team called Ada and Jones's Fight Club in honor of the two kids. There's 11 people on our team. And so there's a fundraising goal for each hiker. We're going for a training hike later today.
Yeah.
But there is a pretty significant training commitment because you're on the trail we start at 2:30 in the morning and hike all day. It's going to be like a 17-hour day to get the 30 miles in.
They provide, I think, 3 aid stations, but you'll be, supporting yourself from station to station. So it's big chunks of carrying water and just it's a big day. You know, we're all pretty athletic and outdoorsy, but this because yeah. 30 miles off the couch is, we're not like, that young anymore.
Right. And how? And do you, so 2:30 in the morning, and you hope to finish at what time?
Like 5:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I think it said 60% of people with cystic fibrosis have access to these more advanced drugs. So they're still figuring out how to get that last 40% on these life-changing drugs as well.
Mm. And this is the drugs that are made by that one manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Then are people trying to talk in front of Congress about this particular drug maker?
The CF Foundation does have a whole advocacy arm. They do a march on the Hill every year to raise awareness of this. There's a lot of talk every year just in Utah about copay accumulators, which has to do with how much parents are paying or people with CF are paying out of pocket for these drugs. The insurance companies really and the drug companies are profiting and the people with CF are hurting.
The two sides of it is that he's thriving. He runs around and bikes at 7,000 feet. There's other kids in other countries that are
heartbreaking.
A year old that are coughing up mucus that they can't get out. And so it's like we're, again, extremely grateful. And it's like I think that's the inspiration of all the fundraising is because you see what 20 years of life looks like on a baby on the back end or 40 years of life. And you're like, why does this not have the opportunity for everyone?
If folks would like to donate to our hike, they can go to fundraise.cff.org/fallhike2025/JonesDad.
And what's your goal?
Our team goal is $33,000, which we just hit. That's like sort of the official minimum you have to raise for
to kind of help them hit
to help
their
offset costs for the hike. But our team really wants to get to $50,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're in the bonus round, but we're really looking for that.
You're
going
to make
push.
It. You'll get there. 100%. Yeah. It's so lovely to meet you both.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For
absolutely.
Having us and letting us tell Jones' story.
I can't wait to meet Jones.
That was nice, Andrea.
Yeah, and, go Meinholds. Good luck.
And that story will be posted along with everything else from the Community Campfire on our website if you want to learn more about that. So, today, October 3rd, National Body Language Day. Woo-woo to our charade players
no
out there.
No way. Thank you, Darwin. You know, he's the one that... observed nonverbal communication back in the 1800s. He wrote a book about it.
I'm telling you, that's some reading for the weekend. The expression of emotion in man and animals. That's where you can learn first about how everybody uses body language.
Speaking of expressionless things, the Scarecrow Festival is happening this weekend. And if you want to learn more about the annual Scarecrow Festival, it is really cool. Go to our website, kpcw.org. There's an amazing story there by Sydney Weaver.
What's your music fact for the day?
Queen, We Are the Champions, was the most recognized song ever written in the history of songs.
Right.
That's it.
We're going to honor an underwriter, our last campfire kids, and then get into our musical sesh where Mitch and I sat down with the Silver Kings.
Andrea again, Elodie and Griffin share more words that all the kids are saying.
Aura is one.
I don't get what most of these things mean.
You don't get what aura is?
Aura?
No. Spell it.
A-U-R-A.
Okay, so use it in a sentence.
He gained aura when he did a backflip.
He gained aura when he did a backflip.
But he lost aura when he when his voice cracked in front of the whole school. So aura.
So it's like popularity?
Yeah, and coolness. That's what aura is.
Did you know this?
I don't know if it's correct.
No, it is.
It is.
Welcome to this week's musical sesh on the Community Campfire. I'm here with co-host Mitch Elliott.
Hello.
And we are sitting down with the Silver King Rocking Company. Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Dude.
I'm Carrie.
And I'm Dana.
Welcome. Thanks so much for making it over to KPCW today. And you want to just give a little bit of background on the Silver Kings and yourselves?
Sure. So the original iteration of Silver King started during the pandemic when nobody was playing. And I had called some musicians in Salt Lake and said, we were going to do these socially distanced street concerts. And you guys want to play? And so we started playing together. So it was a full-on kind of dead jam band. And then we got a guy in the band who had toured with Robbie Krieger from The Doors for 8 years. Playing keyboards. So very dynamic group. Lead guitar player falls in love, moves to Port Townsend. Keyboard player doesn't return calls. Drummers in six bands. So that kind of started to die. And so Dude and I have played together on and off for almost 30 years. So we started to put something together. And then about a little less than a year ago, right? Carrie had met Dude and said, can I come over and sing some night when you guys are playing? So she came over and we were like, damn, girl can sing. And it's so fun. And so it totally changed the whole dynamic of everything. We were going to change the band name, but then it was like, I have three tubs of hats and t-shirts. So let's just keep the name. All right, we'll keep the name. It's very Park City-centric name, and the logo, I stole the 1880s stock certificate of the Silver King Mine to use. And so the whole music kind of changed to, I've never played so many four-minute songs in my life, because I come from a different musical background, but it's been so fun and so creative, and Carrie's just a delight to play with and to be around, not like Dude.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not included in that one.
Carrie, can you tell us what it was like from your end going in and playing with these guys and being relatively new to the group?
Sure. Well, the story goes that I was getting my boots fit by Dude. And I moved here to Park City. I'm not like old school like these guys. So I've been here for 5 years and I've sung in bands before and I just didn't have time to put something together or the energy. And I'm getting my boots fit and I saw Dude's phone case and he's got this Fender amp on it. And so that kind of started the conversation. And he's talking about his band before and he doesn't have a singer. And my husband goes, Carrie sings. And that's how it started. But it's awesome because I've brought in a lot of songs that they never, ever probably would have even considered playing. And now Dana's like, that's my favorite song that we do. So one of them that we do. And it's just been great. And you're super fun to play with. And we've got a really diverse set list. So we kind of play to a large audience.
And you had mentioned a little bit about the Silver King Mining Company logo. Can you tell a little bit more about where the name came from?
I'd written songs about mines, and, you know, the previous band, which Dude was in for a decade or more, was Motherlode. And so the whole idea of keeping it mine-centric and based on Park City's history was where it came from. And today we actually have 3/5 of the band here. So we have a keyboard player and a drummer that are in the group that have played all summer. And we decided, let's do both, because when it comes down to it, there's some of us that really don't want to start at 10 o'clock at night anymore. And there's a lot more venues for trios and more acoustic things. So this is still relatively new. We've only done a couple of gigs together as a trio.
And dude, you have a long Park City history with playing music. You were part of starting the Back Alley Bash here at
Correct.
Park City. Can you tell us a little bit about your background there and then how you ended up with the Silver King Rock & Co?
My first year helping organize the Back Alley Bash, I overheard Dana and a bandmate going, you know, we really need to get a bass player, you know, and that was for Motherload. And I was like, I might know a guy. And so we started talking some more and then started playing. So that was back in 93, maybe 94. But yeah, we started playing then. And then coincidentally, I was able to hire us for some Back Alley Bashes.
Shocking.
I know, right? And yeah, so the bash itself is obviously a blast, and that's back when we had it at the Cole Sport parking lot, and outgrew that pretty soon afterwards and moved the bash to the Townliffe Plaza, and then you guys all came up with the brilliant idea of moving it to City Park, which I thought was just the most wonderful idea ever because it was like old school. I mean, I remember this one guy, when we used to have City Park concerts, this guy would bring his couch from across the street and he'd put it up in the field. And he had this like 5-gallon bucket and he was making margaritas with a gas-powered blender. And I was like, I can't wait to get back to that scene. That's just great.
Well, we are sitting down with the Silver King Rocking Company right here.
I'm so curious what it's like behind the scenes. What is it like at band practice for you guys?
There's no plan.
There's a lot of ADD in the room, let me just tell you. We have a general idea of what we're going to sit down and try and do, and then that takes about 10 different directions. So we have, come on, let's rein it in, yep. Right? And but we have come up with songs that we really didn't anticipate playing, and it's great because I hear lots of stories from the group. It's kind of just like this. We sit around literally just like this.
That so organized chaos.
It's great.
I think most practices, you know, we've touched each base with each other on, I heard this, or should we try this? And so we'll have some opportunity to try to practice a few things before we come to practice. And the thing for me that's really so fun musically is that I trade off a lot between acoustic guitar and electric guitar, and then get to play a little more harmonica than I'm used to. You know, eventually we'll start working in mandolin and things like that. And it's been interesting because in the learning curve so far, we haven't added really any original music, although there is some to pull from. And so that'll eventually make it out. In practices, usually there's a libation somewhere on the side. The thing that's been really cool is we've been pretty diligent about doing it. For the most part, try to get together once a week.
There's a huge eclectic mix that's now coming to this band. And how do you figure out what you're going to cover or what songs are going to be?
It's pretty much, if I bring it in, we're not going to do it. At least the way I think is that if there's a lot of music out there. And if I hear something that reminds me of Carrie's voice, or like we were listening to a Pretenders tune the other day, and I was like, oh, there's a harp thing in there. Dana would sound great on that. So in my mind, it's kind of like, how does that song become a Silver King song? Does it work with our sound? And that's how I kind of get motivated as far as covers go.
And I think Carrie's brought in like Eva Cassidy and Etta James and Jewel and Lake Street Dive and all these things that I certainly wouldn't have learned a lot of those things. But it's fun. I practice daily. And just watching her sing is so fun, and especially live, because Carrie cannot sit still, which is awesome. But and then, you know, I think after a couple months, she's like, wait, aren't you all kind of deadheads? You know, we can do a dead song or two. So we've added a couple. And then the keyboard player, he was a Bay Area musician in the 60s and 70s. And so he brought in some things from there. And then Greg Friedman, who's been around forever, he throws some stuff out. So every week there's some things that are new, and it's just fun.
If you guys could go back in time or the present now, and you could add one person to the group for like just a feature on a song that you guys are doing, who would you add into the mix?
Yeah, Carrie, you start. Who would you like to see on one of your songs?
That we already know personally, or just
anything?
Anybody.
I'm shooting anybody.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Stevie Nicks.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good call.
That kind of makes sense, right?
Dana, who's jumping to your mind?
I don't know. Somebody like like Billy Strings or Doc Watson or someone like that.
Yeah, Billy Strings is blowing up right now. Absolutely. Yes. All right, dude. How about you?
I'd have to go with my man Derek Trucks.
Derek Trucks. Nice. Lots of good options out there for you guys to add into the mix. But thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Where can people find your stuff?
So basically, we are right at a point where people are doing vacations and everything. So we are going to be not playing until probably the beginning of December. I'll post things and we'll put things out through Facebook and whatever on
the
upcoming
gram.
Gigs. Yeah.
But you said you guys are going to take a little bit of a hiatus, go on some vacations and stuff. And then do you have anything in the future that you're looking forward to?
Basically, when we all get back around December, we'll start, you know, hitting up some of the more acoustic venues, Silver Star, Pendry, things like that. The Notch.
Always available for private functions as well.
Yes. And I think we're talking to Brian because, you know, Mountain Town is now booking so much of the music that happens in Park City. And when we got together to start, it was right after he'd already booked the whole summer. So we had one Mountain Town gig, I think. But so we're hoping that over the next year, we'll get a few more with them.
Thanks again for coming on to the Community Campfire.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
All right, that's a wrap on today's show.
And subscribe to the Community Campfire podcast so you never miss an episode wherever you find your podcasts.
If you have an idea for a future show, send us an email, campfire@kpcw.org.
John, fun fact, what you got?
3 out of 4 Americans appear on TV at least once in their lifetime. So get out there and get your 15 minutes of fame. You've been listening to KPCW Park City. NPR News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Senate remains deadlocked over a short-term funding bill as the government shutdown stretches into day 3. Just a short time ago, House Speaker Mike Johnson took aim at the Democratic holdouts in the upper chamber.
And all the Democrats who are voting against it in the Senate right now, every single one of them have given impassioned speeches about how you must pass continuing resolutions, you must pass CRs. You should never shut down the government because it's dangerous and destructive and selfish and wrong. Well, suddenly they've changed their tune.
Democrats are demanding that a stopgap bill includes an extension of federal health care subsidies under Obamacare. Republicans argue that can be worked out in future negotiations. The Senate is expected to vote next hour on rival plans to reopen the government. Both measures have failed repeatedly in recent weeks. The Trump administration is withholding more than $2 billion for infrastructure projects in Chicago. NPR's Joel Rose reports. It's part of a broader funding fight targeting Democratic areas during the shutdown.
White House Budget Director Russ Vogt says the Department of Transportation has put on hold more than $2 billion to improve Chicago's transit system. Vogt said the pause is intended to, quote, ensure funding is not flowing via race-based contracting, unquote. Earlier, the Trump administration said it would withhold $18 billion in federal funds from major rail and subway projects in New York on similar grounds. That appears to be targeting New York congressional leaders, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, whom the White House is trying to blame for the government shutdown. Schumer called the tactics, quote, stupid and counterproductive. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump is giving Hamas a deadline, sign the U.S. brokered peace plan by 6 p.m. Sunday, or face what he calls consequences like no one has ever seen before. In a post on social media, Trump warned that all hell will break out if Hamas refuses the deal, which was outlined by the U.S. and accepted by Israel. Flights were briefly suspended at Munich Airport in Germany after drone sightings last night. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports.
The airport said in a statement that at least 17 flights were grounded overnight, impacting 3,000 passengers, while airport officials diverted 15 additional flights to other airports in the region. The airport reopened at 5 in the morning local time when arrivals and departures were again deemed safe. Munich is not alone. Last week, several airports in Denmark were forced to close for the same reason. Denmark later banned all civil drones as it hosted a summit of European leaders to discuss support for Ukraine as well as a potential drone wall initiative, a layered network of interception systems. Europe has been on alert due to a string of sightings and incursions by Russian drones into NATO airspace. Rob Schmitz, NPR News, Berlin.
This is NPR News in Washington. The Supreme Court will take up a challenge as to where people can carry guns in Hawaii. The Trump administration is urging the justices to hear the case, saying the law conflicts with a 2022 ruling that affirmed the right to carry firearms in public under the Second Amendment. Hawaii's law bans guns on private property unless the owner allows them. It also prohibits firearms in places like beaches, parks, bars, and restaurants that serve alcohol. The WNBA Finals begin tonight. The best-of-seven series between the Las Vegas Aces and the Phoenix Mercury caps off another year of record attendance and ratings for the league. NPR's Becky Sullivan has more.
The Las Vegas Aces are no stranger to this stage. They won the title in 2022 and 23. This year, though, the Aces were slow off the block and needed half the season to find their footing. Then they went on a 16-game winning streak to end the regular season. Star center and the league's leading scorer, Asia Wilson, was named MVP for a record fourth time. The Mercury have a new look this season with the arrival of all-stars Alyssa Thomas and Satu Sabali. They're looking for their first title since 2014. This is the first year the finals will be a best-of-seven series. That's up from best-of-five. That's one of the ways the league is trying to cash in on the dramatic increase in attendance and ratings over the past 2 years. Becky Sullivan, NPR News.
Stocks are trading higher on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 377 points. The NASDAQ Composite up 42. The S&P 500 also trading higher, up 25. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Arm, committed to delivering innovative, advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm. Arm.com. This is NPR.
It's 10:06 a.m. You're listening to Dave. I'm with you for the next couple hours. Going to play some good music. It's a beautiful day out there. I hope you're getting outside. Specifically the weather, we're looking at about 64 degrees right now in Park City, expecting to get up to 72 degrees. A little bit of a chance of showers later tonight. Hopefully that might even turn into rain. It may turn into snow by the end of the Saturday. Over in Heber, similar, it's 60 degrees right now, expected to get up to 77. They're expecting showers as well over the weekend. So let's hope that that turns into a little bit of rain. Traffic is looking pretty clear. Call if you know any otherwise. Just a reminder there, that is a pretty significant traffic on 224. I think it's running a little bit better today. I just came through there. But always keep in mind, if you're coming up anywhere between Silver Springs and the Canyons, you might be hitting that bus transit